It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 522. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. We have a voicemail that I'll play later. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show. All one word on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow. Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. And MikeNationNet. We also have the wiki, and that is at mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all of the past shows, the audio, the show notes. It's a great resource. I have another jam-packed show. I got lots to cover. I'm going to talk about what happened in the Apple world last week and how it's impacted me, but also how I've made it work in my favor in really merging the Microsoft Windows world and the Apple world with the way I work. And I want you to hear that and hear some of the things that have come down that I think are important, whether you have Apple systems or not, because you're going to be running into this. If you're doing any consulting work or any repair work, you're going to be involved with clients that have both worlds, that they live in a mixed environment. And how do you get that to work in their favor? And I'm going to share how I'm doing it. And it's really amazing, and I am so happy where we're heading in this with Apple and with Microsoft. It's really great. I have voicemail, like I said, which a comment on the Black Armor NAS, and I also have a couple emails. This show is brought to you by Instant House Call, on-demand remote support and unattended remote access, and it's all in a single tool. Instant House Call recently upgraded their specialist sign-in, and I absolutely love it. The screen they give you, it's bigger, where you have more real estate to see all of your unattended clients. It's now easier to get reports and summaries of how long and how many times you've connected to each client. You don't have to sign in. You can do it right in the unattended remote access screen. I also like the little feature of changing the color so I can have different clients or different types of support. Maybe you have different ways of using a color code for each of your unattended access. I love it, love it, love it. And you can start providing remote support for your customers today with Instant House Call. Click on the link on the left-hand side of my website, and that'll take you to instanthousecall.com, and you can enter the promo code MikeTechShow for a free 15-day trial. You got to try it. You hear me talk about it all the time. It's because I use it every day to support my clients. So last week, as a matter of fact, Thursday night, OS X Yosemite was released. Last Thursday, there was the announcements of the upgraded iPad Air 2, and I forget some of the other things that Apple released. It was sort of a minor bump on everything. Well, OS X Yosemite, which they've talked about for a while, finally released. The install went flawlessly on my iMac. I upgraded it, took a few minutes, You know, it was big download, still like a 4 gig download, and it's free, but it added functionality that I really, really like. And you can look at this as a negative or a positive. It's kind of interesting. My iMac, and I upgraded my MacBook Pro. My MacBook Pro and my iMac now look more like my iPhone. They've taken the operating system for the iPhone, and they, with the introduction of iOS 7 a year ago, they smoothed out the icons and made it cleaner and changed it. It was a big change for iOS and for the iPhone. Well, now all my icons and everything looks more like my iPhone. There's more synergy between the operating systems. One of the disappointments, but I understand, I had to upgrade my VMware Fusion. So if you have an iMac and you're using VMware Fusion to run other operating systems like I do, I run Windows 7 and I run Windows 8.1 on all my Macs. I had to upgrade to VMware Fusion 7.0. That was a $49 hit. Had to do it. Matter of fact, version 6 would not even launch. So had to bite the bullet, do that upgrade. And then it upgraded VMware tools and upgraded the instances that I had of already Windows 7 and Windows 8.1. So I didn't have to rebuild any of that. It just did an in-place upgrade and everything's working fine, I'd like to report. They updated. It's now a flat and translucent interface. When I take one of my programs and I move it around the screen, it's not totally clear. It's this translucent frame around the program that gives you a little bit of the background, what's behind it, almost like a three-dimensional effect that's kind of neat. They've added a more informative notification center. They improved Spotlight, totally redesigned the search for Spotlight, where now I used to only click on that to bring up applications. Now you can do full internet Wikipedia searches. You could launch, go into a website. So you have a very detailed, more intense searching with Spotlight. There's a cross-platform Dropbox-like, and it's called iCloud Drive. I am not embracing iCloud Drive, and I'll talk about that in a couple minutes. You have a faster iCloud-powered mail. Again, that's nothing I'm embracing because I'm an Outlook person still. And then you have a faster streamlined Safari. I got to admit, Safari is so impressive on the Mac that I'm a Firefox person on all my Mac devices, and it's kind of pulled me into the Safari world. That's how good Safari is. So that's really nice. One of the big things that they've accomplished is this past Monday, they released 8.1 for your iPhones. So all of your iPhones can upgrade to 8.1. I upgraded my iPhone 6. As soon as I upgraded my iPhone 6, there's a continuity that happens between all of my Macs, my iPad mini, my iPad Air, and my iPhone. You can pair, and I'm going to use the word pair, your iPhone with all of your Apple devices and have them use your iPhone for SMS texting, answering your phone. I actually held a conversation on my iMac using the speaker phone and the speaker built into the iMac. I held a conversation. It was interesting. I need to test that more because it was just a quick call. I don't know how it sounded at the other end, how the microphone is on the iMac. I have to explore that more. So this continuity makes your work, text messages, and phone calls available on all devices. And again, it requires 8.1 on your iPhone. And when you pair it, they'll give you a number that'll pop up that you got to enter on your iPhone to allow the Mac device to talk to it. The handoff is a new feature in Yosemite and iOS, and it prompts you to pick up your work on your iPhone or iPad, whether you're composing an email, message, or editing a document. I can be working on something on my iMac, go into another room, open up my iPad, and there's a handoff on the exact work that I'm working on. It's an instant hotspot is a new feature that allows you to share your iPhone's internet connection easily with your Mac as soon as your device is in range. Your phone will appear in the Wi-Fi menu and let you connect directly to it and share its internet connection. I mean, I've done that already with a hotspot with my iPhone, so I don't know how exciting that is. I always use my iPhone as a hotspot, and here's a tip, and I'm seeing this more and more. Did you ever notice if you have a wireless access point that certain laptops can't connect to, and all of a sudden you have a Windows 8.1 laptop and it can't see that SID and that access point, yet you know it's working because the other devices around you are working? I could not pair my iPhone with my Microsoft Surface Pro last week. I did a little digging, and here's a rule of thumb and a tip just to make it easy. When you're picking the SID name for your access point or your router, do not use spaces or characters. Be contiguous and use all just letters and numbers. Here's why. On my iPhone, I went in and changed the SID name, the name of my phone. It was SmithMH-iPhone. So I've had no troubles with any Apple devices, and I've had no troubles with one of my other Windows laptops. My Surface Pro would not see that hotspot. I read that if I took the character out, that would solve the problem, and it was instant. I went in to my iPhone. I took the dash out. It now says SmithMH iPhone, one word. It appeared immediately on my Surface available Wi-Fi access points. I picked it, connected up, entered the password, and was surfing with no trouble. I had an employee with one of the clients that I was working with this week, and in the beginning of the week, he was explaining he was having trouble. He had a space in his name. I said, go home, take that space out, and then connect up. Guess what? Came back the next day and said, Mike, that solved my problem. So when in doubt, look at the name of the SID. And if you can, take all of those characters and spaces out. It's a great tip if you're setting up a Wi-Fi access point for any client that's new. When you discuss what name you're going to pick, make sure to counsel them to pick the name with no spaces, no dashes, no ampersands, no characters. Just keep it letters, numbers. All right, to continue, iMessage now supports syncing SMS messages from other mobile OSs across all of your devices. As long as your phone is in range, it'll sync and it can read all of your text messages on your Mac as well as on your phone and tablet. I love this. If I'm not at my phone, but it's in the room with me, and I'm on my iMac, and there's a text, and it was someone that used to be, if they were an Android, I couldn't text them from the Mac world without special utilities. Well, now it's natural within iMessage. I can now send and receive SMS text messages. That's really nice. New iMessage will show you incoming calls on your Mac, which I said, and it acts like a caller ID, so you can decide whether you want to answer. If you do answer, you can take the call right on your Mac and use it as a speakerphone that routes your calls back through to your phone. The same works for outgoing calls as well. You can select a phone number in Safari on your Mac and select call on iPhone and place the call on your Mac or pick it up on your iPhone. Very impressive how they've developed this continuity between all of their devices. Don't worry, I'm going to get to the Windows continuity with the Mac in a second. iOS 8.1, and it allows me to SMS, and I upgraded it on all of my devices. I went all in here with all these upgrades. So I had to upgrade my iPad Air, my iPad Mini, and my iPhone. All now have 8.1, so they're all working together. And the only reason I flipped the switch and did it on all of them was because of this continuity feature that I've been talking about, and I wanted to experience that across all of my Apple devices. Apple Pay, of course, is the spotlight feature, and that's the big thing, and that's where they really want it. I have not even begun to use it, and I don't know if I will. I may embrace it. I got to see more of it. I'm not totally 100% all in on Apple Pay, so I'll just keep an eye on it. And you can use it with your iPhone 6 or 6 Plus in any retail stores simply by holding your iPhone and the Touch ID sensor near a supported point of sale terminal. And of course, you know, there's a lot of merchants that are on board now with that. The camera roll is back, but only for those who choose to use Apple's iCloud Photo Library, which is a new beta service. Passbook passes can be sent between devices using Apple's AirDrop feature. Keyboards gain a dictation option to use a third-party service as opposed to Siri. So there was a lot of improvements with 8.1, but the big, big feature was, of course, Apple Pay. Well, I want to talk about the synergy between my Windows world and my Apple world. And what I'm using is OneDrive. I do not want to have different online storage services like iCloud and OneDrive and Dropbox. That's it. I had to make sure and consolidate and use one. I have OneDrive. And because I have Office 365 Home, I said this in the past, I have a terabyte of storage. Well, I had 15 gig free when you get the OneDrive. And then another feature, which was brought up by a listener and I mentioned in a past show, if you turn on your photo backup on your iPhone, you get an additional 15 gig. So I now have a terabyte 30 gig, which is pretty cool. I turned on the feature in OneDrive on my phone to back up all of my photos, and it's just seamless. So I'm backing up my photos from my iPhone to OneDrive. You can get OneDrive app from the App Store in Apple, and it's free. You download it as a regular app right from the store. Sign in to your Microsoft account. I check to have it start automatically. And a neat feature, I was able to drag and drop my OneDrive. I opened it up and took the icon and dragged it to Finder on the sidebar on the left-hand side, and OneDrive is now an option for me. So since it starts up on my Apple devices, I'm able to easily work with all my files across my Windows devices and my Mac devices and all my portable devices. So right now, I'm using OneDrive as my link to everything, and I'm so glad that they have apps for the Apple ecosystem. One really neat thing, and I think I mentioned this, I don't know if I mentioned this last week or not, I was using OneNote on my Surface Pro 3, and I was doing some handwritten notes, and when I opened up my Apple iPad Air, I opened up OneNote, and it completely synced. So I'm syncing files and work and handing it off between my Windows laptop and my tablets. That's wonderful. So being able to interact with all of that, and of course, iCloud for Windows works great. I've always been syncing seamlessly my contacts, my calendar with Outlook. I use Outlook 2010 on my main system, and I sync with no trouble using iCloud. So the key here is to get all of your devices working and having a workflow that's seamless, that works with you. And the reason I'm sharing this is I want to give everybody ideas for your clients that if you run into someone in this mixed mode, you can get it to work. And you're going to look like a genius that you were able to get everything to work. And it's not that difficult. And I've done that with a client who's the CEO of one of my biggest accounts. And being able to get him to work like that, he is just so overjoyed because he has an Android phone. He has a Surface Pro 3 for his laptop, but he also has an iPad. And I have him seamlessly working across all the devices. And that's the key. I'm so glad that Apple, Microsoft is continuing to not lock out any other platform and to make it work together, because it just makes us more efficient and gives us more options. I want to talk about a strange fix for the client problem I mentioned last week. The two systems that rebooted after a power outage, one of them, I can't believe they were both demoted to work groups. There was no human intervention. How can a reboot knock someone off an Active Directory domain and put them in a work group? I've never seen that. When I remoted into the one, I was able to re-announce him to the domain, and he's working flawlessly. The other one gave me a fit last weekend. I was able to re-announce him to the domain. I was connected. He was connected to the internet. But if you went into network connections and sharing, it said he was not connected to any network. Yet clearly the system was connected to a network. There is an obscure registry entry permissions that you have to apply. And it worked. I applied this and I'm like, how is this going to fix it? But I've seen several comments in the forums, and I'll have a link to this in the show notes. I applied those permissions, and guess what? It was like magic. It automatically showed it was connected. Very weird. But I was able to solve those problems. But the key was making sure instant house call unattended was set up on both of them. So I talked to my client, and I had to have them, even though they were already on, something really happened that it even knocked out instant house call. So I said, go to my website, download the client, and then I walked him through setting up unattended mode, so this way I could work on this on the weekend. I was able to solve everything Saturday night. We had an appointment, and this client is a good 45-minute drive from me, and we had a 10 a.m. Sunday morning appointment that if he would meet me at the office and open up, and I'd come in and start working on the problem, and I so did not want to do that. I needed to solve this remotely, and with a lot of due diligence Saturday night, I was able to solve the problem. So very, very happy about that I didn't have to get up Sunday morning and head out to a client. Let me play this voicemail from Rod.
Mike, this is Rod from Yukon, Oklahoma. I thought I would call in and give some words of support to your lukewarm review of the Seagate Black Armor NAS. In 2011, I bought about four or five of these Black Armor NAS 440 units, which are the same NAS as your 400, but they're just pre-populated with four drives already. I bought some of them for the company that I was working for, and one for a client and one for home. And most of the units were used for light-duty storage, but some of them were set up with iSCSI storage to be used for a VMware server storage for virtual machines. I can tell you that I've had nothing but trouble with nearly all of the units I've purchased. I can usually count on each unit locking up at least once per month, and they are so unreliable that I even have an iBoot remote power reset device hooked up to a couple of them so I can hard power cycle them when they lock up if I don't have any physical access to it. And I also purchased a couple of Netgear ReadyNAS units that I've had very good luck with. I use them in the same manner, and they've been rock solid. One of them has been in use for about 6 years now. Anyway, the NAS that I really like is the Synology. I have a DS412 Plus at home and a couple of other Synology units at client locations, and I've had no trouble with them at all. I really like the GUI interface on the Synology, and it seems like a much higher quality device than the Seagate Black Armor devices. One thing I really like about the Synology is they seem to keep on top of firmware updates for their equipment, and I can usually count on several updates per year proactively offered to me. On the other hand, with the Black Armor unit, I have it set to notify me of updates, and I don't think it has ever offered me a new update. Every now and then, I'll check back to see if there's a new firmware version, and even check today, and I still have the latest version, which is probably over a year old now. Anyway, I wish you luck on your unit. I hope you have better luck than I have. And for now, I'm a big Synology fan. I enjoyed listening to your show, and I've supported you through your Amazon link for many years now. Thanks, and keep up the good work.
Rod, thank you very much, and especially for supporting my Amazon link. Interesting that you've been having actual hardware problems. I have not experienced that, but I'm not abusing it at all. It's just a nice centerpiece for my home network, and I've been using it now for a few weeks, actually maybe even a couple months now, and it is working great, I mean, from that standpoint. But I'm not banging away and certainly doing any virtualization or any regular activity. It's just some backups. It's hosting all of my music files, so I'm not overworking it. Thank you for all of your comments and certainly your endorsement of the Synology, which anybody that's ever used a Synology device feels the same way, that it is really, really good. He uses my Amazon link, and it's a great segue. Please use my Amazon link to support the show, and that's amazon.micnation.net. Your price is the same. A small commission comes back and supports the show, so I really appreciate that. The ding you heard during the voicemail was all of my devices alerting me to a text message that was coming in, which just reminded me I need to disable them when I'm recording a show. But the text message is from a retainer client that said, "Mike, you told us to hold off on upgrading to iOS 8 until the dust settles and everything's clear. Now I see there's an 8.1. Can we upgrade?" And I just text her back and said, "8.1 is good. Go for it. Do the upgrade." That is exactly why I have to be exposed to all of the platforms, whether it be Android, whether it be Apple, Windows, it doesn't matter what it is, laptop, desktop, NAS devices. You have to, because of those questions. This is a client. She owns a business that I help take care of all the IT support, but personally, they have iPhones and they need advice, and I want to be able to give the right advice. So that was a great example. Good timing there. This is an email from Terry from Arizona, and he says, "I am wondering if other techs have run into problems upgrading Windows 8 to Windows 8.1. And we've talked about this in the past, and there have been several occasions with people complaining of problems. I have had 5 computers that would not upgrade to 8.1 without me having to figure out how to do it. I was able to get all the computers upgraded to 8.1, and below I detail some things I had to do. On my own computer, I had to uninstall and reinstall, and he has a knowledge base article here. On a friend's computer, I had to manually install a file, and for some reason, it was not downloaded by Windows updates. Here's the problem with Windows 8.1. They introduced it where they forced you into the Microsoft Store. Oh, what a mess. Why do that? Why not keep it as an update? I think now everything's going to be updates, but they made everybody go to the Windows Store. Stop that, Microsoft. Bad, Microsoft. Bad. That was not a good move, and that, I think, caused a lot of the grief. On a computer at work, those two methods did not work. I found the solution on a German website. I had tried to upgrade the computer 3 or 4 times previously. Usually, I do not try 3 things at once, but I wanted to get the upgrade over with before the end of the day. So this is what worked. Disabled all non-Microsoft services and rebooted. Deleted semantic endpoint detection and rebooted. Uninstalled the video driver and did not reboot. Then I went to the Microsoft Store and the upgrade to 8.1 installed. Wow. Stuff like this is job security for techs. All the computers I upgraded were under warranty, but I know it was useless to call Dell or HP. In January, when I had the problem with my upgrade to 8.1, I did open a case with Microsoft, but they did not have a solution. I fixed the problem before they ever got back to me. It's Terry. Terry, that's amazing what you had to go through. What I wish, and I think this is available, but it's very hard to lay your hands on it. An administrator's download, sort of a network download where you can have 8.1. I used to like that for the service packs, like for Windows 7 Service Pack 1. You know, you would download the big file and have it with you, and you could take it to every workstation you were working on. Microsoft needs to get back to basics when it comes to supporting multiple systems for us techs. They got to make it easy. They got to supply a network install that we can have, that we can apply to all of our systems. That's important. It's very important for Microsoft to not alienate the technicians that support their operating system. This email is from Wayne. I am battling a nasty problem that is just over my head, and I know this is your livelihood, and if you cannot answer it, that is okay. Windows 8.1 on a new Dell laptop. The customer uses Maximizer CRM and the installed SQL server for her database. She got it installed and it was running. All her data was on a hard drive from a laptop that crashed, but the hard drive is okay. And I had it and found all the files in the SQL and the SQL server. She did not have a backup of the Maximizer data .back. So I tried to drag and drop the files from the old SQL data to the new one. Well, that did not work. And then the SQL server would not communicate with Maximizer anymore. I tried to uninstall Maximizer in hopes it would reinitialize with the SQL server. I deleted all the Maximizer files from the SQL, still no. I attached a screen I get when I try to reconnect. I am a loss for my customer and is really anxious to get things fixed. And I thank you for anything you can help with. Love the show. Keep up the great work. The work you do helps me out. Wayne, I know this is so obvious, but did you call the software manufacturer? You're going to need to, what I would do is start from scratch. Download the installation documents. And here's the big problem. You can't just drag and drop the data from the SQL database like that. You're in a more difficult position because you don't have a backup of the SQL database. A lot of this data may have to be recreated. You're going to need the help from the manufacturer that may give you some insight into that. This is a lot more complicated because they have no backup. And I don't know, did you enter the situation? Hopefully you entered the situation after the fact. And now you got to make sure you're getting a good backup of the SQL database. I'm going to throw out there, you've heard me talk about Shadow Protect all the time. Shadow Protect will back up SQL databases live while you're running, and you can do a restore. I've done it. So that is the first thing you need to do, is get SQL reinstalled, get Maximizer installed, work with the manufacturer on trying to get the data that you found and see that you can get it imported somehow. That's the only way. You're going to have to work with an expert from that database program. It's the only way you're going to be able to get that data in without a backup. And then going forward, hopefully your client will back it up. And if they say, oh, I don't want to spend the $100 for that, set, this is all your data. You've just lost everything. You're going to lose it again. How do you not? I've actually had a client do that, where they've lost everything and still wouldn't pay the money for a backup. Well, now we're talking, there's got to be brain damage or something. You know, how can you lose all your data and not learn your lesson? That's not a client I want to work with. And that's a client I walk away from, because they don't get it. They never get it. And I don't want them as a client. If you've lost everything and then refuse to spend a couple dollars to back up your data, there's something wrong. And I can't have you as a client. Hopefully that's not the situation, and hopefully you're going to be able to get some help. I bet you the help's not going to be free, and you're going to have to pay some support for it. Let me know how you make out, Wayne, and if I can do anything, I'm here. I will try to help you. Email from Timothy, and it's a reset folder redirections permissions. Mike, hi there. I just recently discovered your show around about the time you did episode 497, and I have to say that it is on a nonstop train racing to the top of my favorites. I really enjoy not only the stories from the trenches, the overall entertainment value of the show, and your dedication to helping the other techs out there. Keep up the good work. I wanted to reply to an email you read on show 521. A listener named DJ was having some issues with what sounded like permissions on an Active Directory domain controller. I ran into a situation that was somewhat similar to his, where all the directory permissions for the redirected folders and the user folders got trashed. It was like the ACLs were beaten like scrambled eggs. End users were unable to log into the domain, and if they were lucky enough to already be logged in, they could access any of the redirected folders. It was definitely a permissions issue. I spent about an hour going through the permissions, manually recreating the permissions, granting proper ownerships and security settings. Once I finished repairing the permissions and redirected folders were accessible again, and everybody could log into the domain again, yay, let's go get some lunch. Shortly thereafter, I received another phone call from the site. The end users were able to see and open their files, but when they tried to save files, they were met with access denied errors. They were unable to modify and unable to create. After spending another couple hours troubleshooting the permissions, double-checking everything, I knew that I missed something somewhere. Unable to resolve the issue, I started looking for a way to just reset all permissions back to what they would have been to begin with. After doing some digging, I found an awesome little script to reset the permissions. To me, it was my Hail Mary. I was stressed out, running out of options, and getting very frustrated. I ran the script, which took about 20 minutes to complete, but in the end, it repaired all the permissions to the folders and the users could properly access their files. I wanted to share this because I think it may help DJ solve his problem. Thank you for your continued dedication to the listeners. I have not had a chance to look at the script. It's an attachment. I'm going to open it up in a sandbox and take a look at this before I post it up. So it may not make the show notes this weekend, but I got to look at the script before I just blindly share it with everybody. And I've done that. Anything I post up, I'll take a look at and make sure that it's not going to do any harm to your computer or do anything wrong. But I'll review this and then post it up and use it with caution. And I would try to do this somehow in a test environment before you would go to a production environment. And certainly before you would run anything like this in a Active Directory on a domain controller and in any kind of a corporate environment like that, you back up everything. I want a full server image before you dare attempt something like this. So remember that. Have full backups of everything. Then try a repair or try a fix, because you never know what you're going to be running and you could actually make things worse, and you don't want to do that. Quick final email here from Wayne. I have been listening to your podcast for the past year and have gotten a lot out of it. Thank you. I just wanted to let you know, on your recommendation and trying the product out, I contacted Instant House Call and had a demo today. I am happy to say I bought the Express Edition and I am looking forward to using it in my business. I did let Corey, who's the owner of Instant House Call, know that it was because of your show and his sponsorship. That is why I was buying it today. That is so awesome, Wayne. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you very much for checking out the sponsor, which is Instant House Call. I really appreciate it. You're going to like it if you try it. Don't forget my Amazon link, and that's amazon.micnation.net. That's it for tonight's show, and I will see you back next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.